Hello, everyone. This is an episode that I'm really excited to do with you, and it's going to be a little bit different than what I have been. I've been kind of building up to this episode because I feel like this is the least one that people will connect with. But there is a huge amount of people that I know and that I'm spending time with, and it's a part of my life, and it is kink. BDSM kink. Not a lot of people know what that means. Not a lot of people know. All they know is 50 Shades of Grey. So what I can tell you is what BDSM stands for. Right off the hop, there is going to be a lot I talk about in this episode that's going to make you feel uncomfortable. And there's going to be points in this episode where this might not be for you. And I'm totally cool with that. I'm absolutely 100% okay with that. However, even if you're not kinky, I think that this would be a great opportunity for you to learn and be respectful of those who are kinky. And if you are in any community, in the swinger community, or you're in the polyamory community, or if you're just a sexual freak, whatever it may be, a lot of people know those people who are kinky. We are the oddballs. We are the sexual weirdos. And as much as some people don't like to admit it, that swinging isn't vanilla as much as BDSM isn't vanilla. So here I am to talk to you guys about BDSM. What does it stand for? Bondage, dominance, sadism, and masochism. Don't be afraid of these words. When you first hear these words, a lot of people are like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, some of you actually have to look up what the words mean. Let me break it down for you real simple. Bondage. It is fucking awesome. This is one of the biggest fetishes that I have ever. And bondage is fun. It can be sexy. It can be dangerous. It can be great. You know, it takes a lot of practice and it takes time. But once you get it and you have that connection that comes with it, it is incredible. I can't even explain to you how great it is. But bondage, you know, people use, you know, those 4-point restraints that you can put under your bed to make people spread eagle, or a lot of people use little handcuffs, you know, that's all considered bondage. And so A, that's not so scary. Handcuffs aren't that scary, especially the fuzzy ones. Dominance. So this only speaks to some people. You know, there's a lot of different definitions of what you can be or what options you can be in the kink community, but dominance, sadism, and masochism, they're kind of like the ultimate umbrellas. You know, that's like the most common. That's like saying, I can't think of a good metaphor right now, but or similarity, but what I can tell you is that it's kind of the essence of BDSM. And dominance, it means is, yes, you are dominating someone, but someone giving you the gift of submission, that's what you're dominating. The second that someone no longer gives you that gift, you are no longer dominating. That is no longer your right to dominate someone else. We can get into the huge topic that everyone just loves to sit in a class and listen to. For me, I have been to hundreds of different events, and all of these different events and conferences and classes and whatever all start off with this big spiel about consent. And there's a point, there is classes for that. This is not one of those classes. I am not here to give you the spiel about how to differentiate abuse versus play. So that is up to you to go and learn. It's not something I'm very passionate about, as I have a different mindset on a lot of it, and it gets very political and people don't like it, and that's fine. But here is where I can speak my mind about some things. So moral of my story is, dominance is something, is you dominating someone. So for example, my fiance is my daddy dominant. Daddy is a certain type of dominant. There is just doms, sadists, tops, service tops, whatever it may be. Some people might identify with different things, but each of these have different definitions. So just dominant just means that you are the one technically in control. You are the one that makes the decisions. You are the one that has control over someone else's actions or how they're supposed to behave or whatever. You are the one that creates punishments for when they do not act the way that they should. Punishments are also known as funishments for those who like to be a little bratty and have a little fun. And I occasionally do that, but I actually really enjoy being overly submissive and just taking as it comes. So for me, I just identify as submissive because it's the most simplistic way of explaining that I am occasionally bratty and fun, but I respond very well to punishment. There's also sadists. Sadists are people who like to inflict pain, and they actually find personal enjoyment out of it, and they have fun with it. And masochists are the ones who enjoy getting that pain and have fun with it. And I used to identify as a masochist, but I learned over the years that getting pain helped a certain spot within me to grow, but which I'll talk about in a little bit here. But the biggest thing with masochists is they're rare and they're beautiful and they're so strong and I love them. But I don't identify no longer as a masochist because I don't primarily get spoken to with pain. That's why I'm a submissive. I can do pain, sure, here and there, fun, whatever. But I actually no longer speaks to me as much as it used to. People just crave pain, need pain. And I feel like there's a very big difference between a girl who can tolerate a little bit of pain versus a girl who actually needs to have pain. One of my friends I knew would actually, when she wasn't around her partner enough, would actually brand herself to feel connected to him. Just little spots here and there. And that spoke so much to her because that's what she needed to be connected to him. That's a masochist. That's a masochist who loves legit pain and who needs it. And I feel like a lot of people abuse the word masochist in thinking that they love pain, especially with this new 50 Shades of Grey era that have erupted. And I mean, I can't really blame myself. I'm one of those people. But I see kink for what it is and for what it is for me. Anyways, so there's also tops and service tops and all kinds of different terms like slave and master. And once you get into this, you'll understand that you'll have to do research on each and every one of these things because they're so specific. Like daddy, for example, daddies are supposed to be just like, you know, father figures, but they're not supposed to act like your dad. Well, some do. It depends how little the person is. So usually there is a daddy and he has some kind of caring features, like his characteristics are nurturing, caring, being stern when needed, things like that. And to help guide that is what a really essentially a daddy. I mean, if I'm really summarizing here, there's so much more to it, but daddies are supposed to be stern yet loving, where if you have a dominant, sometimes they're not always, can be not always as loving and caring and making sure that your needs are met and prioritizing you and making sure that when you act bratty or when you act a certain way that you're actually trying to get attention, where a submissive should never ever do that. Yeah, so it's a bit of a complication. And where masters and slaves come into play, then slaves are, they have no choice. The only choice that they have is to be a slave and to be not a slave. That's the simplest way to put a slave. They have ultimately no choice. And I respect those women because boy, oh boy, am I way too stubborn-headed to ever commit that much to someone else's will. And the masters are usually, you know, some kind of very big control freaks, but also, you know, they take care of their slaves. Yes, their slaves are sometimes treated poorly or not ideal, you know, as some people would think, but slaves generally like that. But they also get the fact that if you have no choice, then ultimately it is up to the master to be able to notice that if say something is wrong, or you're not eating enough, or you're not doing this enough, or you're not wearing appropriate clothes, or you're being depressed, or it is their responsibility to take care of their slave because the slave has no choice. So that works for some people. I have some occasional, there's slave characteristics that I really speak to me, but I still identify as a submissive. So when I first started out, I was so new, but I was so obsessed. Some say that I had frenzy, but there was never a point really, like some people, okay, so by the way, sub-frenzy is a type of where you can't see clearly, you make really poor choices, and you do put yourself in harm's way to make sure that you try all of the things, do all of the things as fast as you can. And for me, I was, spending a lot of time researching and going to kink events and meeting people and playing with people and trying new things. Sure. But I just found something that was I'm really passionate about. And if anybody knows me, if I'm passionate about something, I'm all in. Like I'm all in. And this is something that spoke to me, that resonated in my core to a very intense level. And so me being fascinated by something that almost to the point, it's like someone being realizing they really want to be a doctor in their life. And they spent 8 years researching it. And they spend almost every waking hour studying, trying to be a doctor. It's no different for me. For me, this is my passion. This right here, talking to you and writing about my crazy ass lifestyle and how kink really altered my life. Anyways, I was new when I first started and I was very fearless. And I had this try anything once attitude. And I pushed myself really a little too far, and I would try things that others wanted. Well, because I was thinking in my head that A, I haven't tried them before, so I don't know if I don't like them. And B, I was supposed to be submissive because that spoke to me. So that meant I didn't have a choice. I didn't know that there was different rules for different labels, for different terms. So when I went and I met people and I talked to people about being submissive, I didn't know that their expectations were that I was supposed to communicate and I was supposed to tell them what I did and didn't like, but instead I just kind of went with it. Sure, why not? I'll give it a whirl. And I still used my words, but I just never used them as efficiently as I do now. Like if something really hurts, for example, I'm not afraid to be like, hey, that's not right. Versus back then, I would be like, oh God, this is awful. I never knew this was supposed to be so bad. When really the person who was doing it was not doing it correctly. And that's okay. You just have to learn with different people and then finally find out what the right way feels like, which we'll get into. I had a lot of ups and downs in my kink. At one point, I was a switch. So that means you kind of float between the top and the bottom. There's what we call the left and the right side of the slash, which just means DS is the slash, capital D on one side and a submissive on the other, just stating in a small s, not a big s, just stating, you know, dominance over submissive. And I had a lot of time where I spent just being a top and I spent just being a bottom and doing some time in the middle. And during that time, you know, I found a lot of control out of being a top and a lot of fun, but I really didn't like being a service top, which ultimately it was what I was doing until I played with someone. If I go into any more detail, anyone who's kinky would figure out who this is. So I'm not going to go into too much detail other than a wonderful human that was an excellent bottom side of the slash. So there are some people that I learned where it really speaks to me to be a dominant. But if I am speaking honestly, it was actually out of fear. And because I was never playing with people who were doing things the right way, who weren't doing the right way for me. And it's because it wasn't their fault. It was simply because I didn't know how to use my words. And every time I did, I'd somehow offended someone. So it's as if telling a teacher that they're doing it wrong, you know? So How does it differ playing from one person to another to be so vastly different? But it happens. You know, we get into this certain mind frame where things are should be this way, and then you play with somebody else and they don't do it the same way. You think that they're either doing it wrong or that you're just having an off day. And one of the keys that I learned that I have a lot more to talk about, but one of the keys that I learned about this is to just trust your gut. If something doesn't feel right, it's probably not just you. They're probably fucking up or have no idea what they're doing, because really, truly, there's not a lot of people. There is a very small actual community in Alberta that has, they're a very small community that actually has an idea what the fuck they're doing and how to really fucking do it. You know, like, there's people who have been in this for 20, 30 fucking years and have been through those like crazy ass times where they had to actually work to get into the BDSM community. They weren't just welcomed and fluttered in and here's how you tie rope, here's how you look at this dungeon, let's show all the people. And hey, I'm the person that's at the dungeon that likes to show people, but and I like to be welcoming. However, back then, it wasn't that case. It was hardcore as fuck. Like, you had to like train for like a year to be welcome in the community and to be really playing with anybody. So you really had to check yourself. And now it's just so vastly open, which, I mean, this is the reason why I'm creating this podcast, because I want you to think about the fact that half the shit that you probably have experience doing, that you've probably had 15, 20 times of doing, you're probably doing it not the best way, and there's always another way to learn. And so that's why I'm going to be doing a series of different types of situations that I've been, and I'm going to be doing interviews with people who have also done scenes that have experience, and you might be able to learn something new. I'm also going to get a new person's perspective where they have no idea what the fuck they're doing, and they're going to speak honestly, and hopefully some of their ideals will speak to some of you too. But, kind of got on a rant there, kink is special. It can be freeing and heal a lot of hidden trauma that you have inside, and it gives back control. So there's this thing called ordeals, and ordeals are a very specialized place in kink where it's not so focused on the actual act of what you're doing to cause physical pain, but it's how to overcome something that is difficult. And ordeals are my favorite way of kink, because it gives power back to those who are struggling with something intense. So for example, me personally, I have a lot of daddy issues and I have a lot of childhood trauma that created a lot of fear and anxiety and problems that I couldn't, and control that I could never get back. And kink was my outlet to get that back. And some of my writings are so powerful. I mean, I had no idea what I was talking about until I reread them and kind of knew where I was actually going. But the ultimate gain was that I was getting back power and control in my life. And not in a sense like, yeah, sure, I went through school and I have a good job and whatever. I'm talking like personal life. Being able to say the fucking word no. Can you believe I am a girl. I'm a sexual, free-spirited woman who has the hardest time saying no. It's almost next to impossible for me to say no. And I had to learn this. And I had to learn it fast. And I had to learn it in the most genuine and honest way. And how to say it with not giving a fuck what other anyone else thought, but the fact that I needed to say no. And that, I can't explain to you how important it is to be able to do what I do now and say no all the fucking time. I love the word no. I say in my sexual life, I mean, personal life, a little bit different. I have a little bit different outlook on that. But the main thing is that the word no is beautiful. Like, no, I don't want to fuck you. I can do that now. Before I couldn't. Can you believe it? Sex Addicts Anonymous. Here we go. So, I have a lot of writings. And I wrote out actually like almost word for word how a scene would go and how I felt in those moments. And I'm quite proud of my writings. I also feel like I was a little bit naive and kind of retarded, but, or sorry, I shouldn't say that word, but kind of, you know, not educated on what I was actually talking about. But the moral of the stories of what I'll tell you are powerful, and that's what the most important part to get through to you about kink is, that it is powerful. It is crazy powerful. Where am I at? So I'm going to talk to you about some of the very simplistic but very much needed to know for those of you, like if I have a lot of swinger friends on here that listen to my nonsense. And for all you swinger pals that are slightly curious about kink, or you polyamory friends that are curious about kink, this little tiny little description, what I'm about to give you about some stuff, is really going to benefit you. So you're kinky. You go to the store and you buy a shitty plastic flogger, and you come home and you hit your partner with it, and they're like, fuck, that hurts. Why would anybody do that? That's horrible. Those floggers fucking suck. And they might have good floggers there, but they're probably really expensive and they suck. So you don't really enjoy it, but you really like the handcuffs and the 4-point restraints, and you're having a good time, and you're, you know, orgasming all over the place because you're like, I'm going to assert dominance and I'm going to pull your hair and choke you and spank you, you dirty whore. And you're going to be like, yeah, I love it. It's so good. Choke me, spank me, pull my hair. Oh, I'm a good slut. And it's going to be fun. But when you want to take that next step into kink, oh, sorry, I got to sneeze. Into kink, you'll get there and you'll start being like, what the fuck is this? This is way more than handcuffs and being tied to my bed and coming over and over and over again. It is a completely different story. So what I'm telling you is that there is a thing called dungeons. Dungeons are where kinky people gather in a public environment where other kinky people are, and they have furniture there. Furniture that you can stand against. Kind of like your bed. But in a more upwards most of the time. So there's a thing called the cross. Obviously, it makes you think it's like a cross that, you know, Jesus and all, but it's more like an X. And there's different spanking benches where you just are bent over comfortably on a bench. And there is rigs, which is pretty much what you would put your hammock on. But this is what we're using. It's a little bit shaped differently so we can suspend people in the air. Or there's mats and people do rough body play. And there is an assortment of furniture. In these dungeons, you will see what we call scenes. Anytime you play, which is another term for it, or have an interaction with another person that is negotiated, it turns into a scene. And it's almost if you open your mind to roleplay, but some people are genuinely this way. So it's not always roleplay for them. For me, I'm genuinely submissive and I genuinely like going through pain sometimes with certain people. And I really like flying. I really like suspension and I'm a really fun bunny and I like to have fun flying. I don't know if I really iterated that or not, but I really like flying. And so there's scenes. In these scenes, there's a beginning, a middle, an end, and there's an after party. Not actually, but the beginning of it should always begin with you talking about negotiations that you already had. Negotiations should always happen outside of, if you're new, outside of the dungeon. The dungeon can bring different kinds of desires. It can bring a lot of, you know, juices flowing, pants feelings. You're feeling kind of sexy. You're kind of turned on and you're willing to say yes to more things. So I suggest for people who are new, not those vets that have played 100 times, but people who are new to negotiate. Usually there's some kind of like cuddle area, or there's some kind of social area where people are just talking, and like you and this other person, it's a more acceptable place where you're not influenced by others around you. You're not influenced by sounds or anything else, and or desire, and you're just having a conversation, and it is what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do, point blank. There are some people out there who are more experienced, who play with more experienced, like tops and bottoms, and negotiations can be a bit of a mind fuck. So be very careful and thoughtful about what you're saying in negotiations. When I first started, I was like, do anything. Never again will I say those words out of my mouth when I'm negotiating with a stranger. If I know someone, then I can specifically say, yeah, let's not do this and this and this, and I know where they won't go. However, if it's a complete stranger, it is so important when you are new to never say yes to anything, because that means they can do anything to you. And no is not a safe word. So, in case you're wondering, it is so important for you to sit down with this person before anything, before they touch you, okay? They need to talk to you about, what can I touch? What can't I touch? Is there any, I have a whole contract that I could probably go over for an entire episode. But, you know, is there any, as a summary, is there any kind of injuries that you have? Is there anything I need to be worried about? Do you have diabetes? Should I be worried about low blood pressure or low blood sugar? You know, people need to know if you have a health issue, especially, you know, STDs. It seems like common sense, but a lot of people sometimes don't think about these things, because a flogger can accidentally sweep up. And then if you have an STD that is a that is not good. I mean, once you fluid bond with something, you should never reuse it again unless it can be cleaned properly. So there's a lot of things that you should think about, because there's like stabby things, there's anal things, there's things people can put in your eyeballs, up your nose, in your ears. You have to think about these. Don't tickle my feet. Don't, you know, show my vagina to the world. Like, these are things that you have to communicate. And this is just the beginning. Okay. So this is just the so basics. You need to know what you're doing in the scene. You want to know, are we doing rope? Are we doing rough body play? What am I actually consenting to here? What is your intention? What is your plan? The biggest question is, how do you do aftercare? So they'll go take you to the scene, and after you guys start, you play, you start. The beginning is making sure you're on the same page. Do I have your consent to touch you? Do I have your consent to do these things to you? And the play begins. And you do the play, and it's super fun, and there is usually a middle and a climax. Not climax, sometimes not orgasm, but, you know, it gets more intense, more intense, more intense, and then eventually you tap out by saying, usually, it depends on what dungeon you're in, but there is usually dungeon safe words, which are green, yellow, and red. Obviously, green, go, yellow, slow down, talk to me, check in, probably change positions, or red, stop. The whole scene stops. It doesn't recontinue. If you say red, it's over. That's it. That is set in stone. There's no renegotiating. There's never renegotiating during a scene in the dungeon ever. Ever. And if someone tries to renegotiate with you in a scene, that means they're fucking new and they have no idea what they're doing, and get the fuck out of there right away, because that is going to hurt you more than it is to benefit you. Than it is going to benefit you. It's going to be bad. So you've gone through, and then you finish. You're done. You tapped out. They tapped out. Tops tap out too. And the scene is over. Important thing here is aftercare. People don't really realize until about, sometimes it's quicker than others, 30 seconds, or they're already in subspace. Subspace is this endorphin-filled, awesome place in your brain where you're like, the lights are nice and I'm relaxed, but I'm also kind of tired and I want to cuddle and things are great and I'm processing a lot of stuff. Oh, I think I'm crying. Why am I crying? I'm not sure why I'm crying. And this, sadly, it usually goes like this feeling can go away fairly quickly. And other times it can actually last for days. So be prepared if you are a top looking to be kinky. Be prepared to take care of your fucking girl for 3 days, please. At least, minimum. And if they say, hey, I need you right now. I need to talk to someone. I don't feel good. I'm like, whether they're sick, whether they're sad, and it's completely irrational, you have to be there. That is your responsibility. You created this disaster for this person. That is your responsibility. If you don't want that responsibility, don't do kink, asshole. And anyways, so you have aftercare. Some people don't need it. Some people do. Some people don't know that they do. For me personally, I don't like aftercare. I used to love aftercare. I used to think that aftercare was the bee's knees. Until, I don't know, there came a time where all of a sudden I was just okay after a scene. Sure, I got really tired usually and sore because I was doing more rope, you know, kind of scenes. And so my body was just sore and achy. And I just needed a good stretch. I needed a little chocolate bar. And I'm good to go. Plus, there's a certain mindset that comes with that for me that I haven't really played with a lot of people that I'm overly connected to. So the scene becomes more about the rope than it does between the connection between me and another person. It becomes more fun and playful than it does intense and connecty and emotional. And it's been a while since I had a scene like that. And I'm okay with that. I like the playful, fun part. I love rope at the end of the day. And I also love the connection, but you know, sometimes there's a time and a place for that. Anyways, so after all these things, you've done all that great stuff. Now you want to try different things. Well, as you can already tell, I've talked about it probably 100 times. Rope is great. There's different kinds of stuff. So floggers are usually a really great actual beginner tool. Because you can get floggers from like local people who actually make them from scratch. Those are the ones to get. You go to the kinky flea market, you go to different events, and they always sell them there. So important to get an actual flogger that is made by someone who actually knows what they're doing with real leather, because then it doesn't cut your skin, right? And it actually almost feels like a massage if you're doing it like not as hard as you can, which you don't have to do. There's different ways of play, and we can go on and on about that for each and every different item, but floggers are, you know, they're simplest. There's certain patterns. You can watch people do it in a dungeon. You can probably reiterate. It's really not extremely difficult. It can hurt people if you don't know what you're doing. Like, for example, the middle or lower middle area of your back, pretty much nothing, like, so you can hit the shoulder blades, but if you go down too far, you can hit a kidney, and then you pee blood the next day. Yeah, done that. Don't want to do it again. So learn from me. Learn from my mistakes, and then you can flog the butt. Butt's easy. There's not much bad stuff going on around there. It's a muscle. And vaginas, and they hurt a little when they wrap around. But floggers are a great starter kit. Whips are a little more advanced, but they're something I really like. And but they can be very sensual and very intense and very connecty. But what I'm getting at is there is a lot of books out there that are fiction, like 50 Shades of Grey. Or many other books similar to 50 Shades of Grey, where they talk about dominance and they actually break consent a lot. And if you don't know what is right or wrong, then you probably don't pick up on the fact that there's a lot of rule breakers out there and there's a lot of predators out there, and you have to be very careful and not do stupid things. And you have to be safe, and you have to be smart, and play in public, and et cetera, et cetera. Don't meet randoms online unless you vet them through other people and you do references, et cetera. What I'm talking about here is I'm talking about the basics of kink and some very simple things. On my next podcast, I'll be talking about the more specific details and probably a lot less broad and a lot less chaotic. But it's the only way that I can really give you an umbrella eye view of kink, because kink is so specialized based on each and every person. I guarantee you, if I interviewed 30 people that were all experts in kink or newbies in kink or whatever, they would all have different opinions. They would all have different rules. They would all have different definitions. And what I have learned is what I've learned from a consensus of a lot of really hardcore people. And these hardcore people I trust and I value their opinion. And I also learned from books, but not fiction books. I'm talking books like Slavecraft. That is a wonderful book and is the actual real version of a slave in a book written by a real slave in the leather community. And it's wonderful. And so anyways, that is my discussion to you. If you're looking to get into the kink scene, there's always a little something around your area. If not, if you're living in a rural community like I used to, there is nothing. Then you go to the nearest biggest city, and there is always something. And one of the greatest things and gifts I can give you if you're looking to get into the kink community and looking for events, looking for people, looking for research, the best place to go is FetLife. It is like kinky Facebook, but with a lot more predators and scary people, and everyone can see your profile. There's no privacy settings. They see every activity that you do unless you delete it. There's no secrets there. And I love that, because I love that I'm out in the open and I am proudly kinky. I am proudly poly. I'm proudly open. I'm proudly sexual. I'm proudly swingy and whatever. And that is the lesson for today. It is long, it is lengthy. I'm surprised if you got to this point. Congratulations. You should message me and say, I got to the end of this episode. And I'd be like, yes, finally. Also, if you're looking for ad space on my podcast, please take the time, message me on any avenue and contact me and let me know. I have a Hotmail. Why choose one? At hotmail.com, and just give me a jingle and I can give you my rates for my new it's whychooseonepodcast@hotmail.com, and I will give you rates of what I'm gonna be doing. Look out, people, there's gonna be ads coming your way soon, and it's gonna be great. Then I'm gonna sex them and slut them up and make them awesome. So that's it. Have a great day, everyone.